we're seeing exponential improvement with each install. Our first lab reporting connection to California's Department of Health went live after a 20-day install, and the second project only took 10 days. We saw the same results in Texas. Our first install took 17 days, and the second took 4. And then Maryland install time dropped from 30 days to 2 days.
Welcome to the Redox Podcast, where we explore the intersection of healthcare and technology with some of our industry's most notable contributors. I'm your host, Nico Skivaski. In my day job, I'm the co-founder and president of Redox, where we're on a mission to enable the frictionless adoption of technology in healthcare. We started the show to share what we're learning and hopefully allow you to skip some steps as you embark on your journey through making healthcare a little bit better. So without further ado, I welcome you to the Redox Podcast. In the near term, rapid and accessible COVID testing will be much more important than an actual vaccine. With ample testing, we can identify who's infected, contact trace, and dramatically reduce the spread. At Redox, we've been working with a variety of labs and diagnostic companies who are actively testing patients. I wanted to learn more about how these labs work and how some of them have been stood up so quickly in the wake of the pandemic. In August, the folks at the University of California, San Diego, reached out to us about a new COVID testing clinical lab they were standing up. By September, we had integrated the UCSD Biochemical Genetics Excite Labs information system with Epic, their EHR. I invited one of the masterminds behind its creation, Dr. Luis Laurent, on the show today to share how they set up their lab so quickly and scaled it to 1,000 tests per day. We're now working with UCSD on electronic lab reporting to share these results with appropriate public health agencies. In the pandemic, Redox has gotten really good at ELR. And something that we get asked about daily. So with that in mind, I invited Meredith Haley, customer success at Redox, who leads the team working with these customers, to give us a quick rundown on the ELR space. But we'll start with Dr. Luis Laurent, who is a professor and vice chair for translational research at the University of California, San Diego. She's both a researcher focused on applying genomic and epigenomic methods to optimize the clinical and preclinical utility of stem cells, as well as an OBGYN caring for women with high-risk pregnancies. Beyond these responsibilities, she spent the past many months utilizing these skills to co-create a high-throughput COVID testing pipeline and the UCSD Biochemical Genetics Excite Lab that's now serving all of UCSD students and faculty as part of the Return to Learn initiative. I invited her here today to tell a story as both a bright spot in our healthcare system's response to the pandemic, as well as an example to similar organizations attempting to do the same. Luis, welcome to the show.
Great, thanks.
So when we first met a couple of weeks back, you told me about how you and other researchers in the San Diego area started collaborating to adapt your research to this COVID testing problem. Can you just start us off with how this all began?
Yeah, so a number of us actually got together through Slack and realized that we all had skills and knowledge that could be applied to improving the level of COVID testing in our community. And these people included Christian Anderson, who's at the Scripps Research Institute, Lauga Farnes, who's at the Rady's Institute for Genomic Medicine, and then Rob Knight, Jean Yao, and I at University of California, San Diego. So it was very organic. We got folks in our labs involved, and each of us took a different chunk of the challenge and solved it in our groups and put it all together into a coherent workflow.
Yeah. Talk to us about those chunks.
Yes. So, you know, we realized that there would be challenges everywhere along the way. So starting with registering people, doing efficient sample collection in a safe way. And starting from the very beginning, we set up registration through an app-based system where people could enter symptom information as well as their information so they would be linked to their sample electronically. Then the samples would go to an accessioning location. And in the beginning, this was at Christian Anderson's lab. At that point, the samples would have their barcode scanned. Samples would be then transferred into plates to enable downstream automation. And again, in the beginning, the plates would then be sealed up and then transported over to Rob Knight's lab, where high-throughput RNA extraction would occur. And then finally, once the RNA was extracted, those plates would be sealed up, put on ice, and then transported to my lab where the qRT-PCR assay would be performed. Every step along this way was tracked electronically through what we call the Inspect Laboratory Information Management System, which was developed by Jean Yao's lab, so that every time a sample got transferred from plate to plate, and when the final results were generated, that that would be linked back to the original individual who had provided that sample.
You actually went through this and did a pilot program with this method, right? Can you talk to us about that process?
Yeah. So over the early summer of 2020, we, through this partnership, tested over 8,000 individuals that were either employees of a number of the health systems around town and also San Diego Fire and Rescue. And this was to demonstrate that we could run this process at scale up to 800 samples per day in a single batch with a limited number of personnel. And at that time, the personnel were volunteers from our different research labs. After we demonstrated this, we received a lot of support from UCSD leadership. And so we now have stood up a workflow in a single location, which takes care of accessioning to result with a number of dedicated personnel who have been specifically onboarded and trained to run this pipeline.
That's amazing. So yeah, you got through that IRB process, you figured out how to set this up amongst these many labs, and then UCSD came along and said, you know, we want to include you as part of our Return to Learn program and set up your own actual clinical lab. From a timescale perspective, that was in early August when you started to put that lab together and move in?
Yeah, so we actually moved our first piece of equipment into the lab in the first week of August. Initially, we brought in equipment from our own research labs that we had used in the pilot program. And this allowed us to do some proof of concept. And we've had to bring in additional equipment to scale to a larger number of tests per day. But yeah, so we moved in early August. And by mid-September, we were running our first clinical samples and we had submitted our EUA application. So we were doing some lower scale samples between mid and late September. And then we started running at scale between, I would say, 600 and 900 samples per day, starting that first part of October. And we are continuing to scale up over time as well.
Can you talk us through the workflow, including the points of integration with the EHR, the application that students use, and the LIS system, and then public health reporting requirements as well? Just like how all those pieces are stitched together?
Yeah, so we started very early, even before we physically moved the first piece of equipment into the lab. First week of August, we already had started discussions about how we were going to do the integration, because we knew that the informatics part of the process was going to be very complex and challenging. So we started right off, as soon as we were asked to start this process. So in terms of reporting back to the electronic medical record at UCSD, we had that integration up and running by the end of September. So that when we started testing at scale in the beginning of October, that was all ready to go. In terms of the county ELR reporting, that's been a bit of a slower process, but the county does have an established system for the interim, which is what we've been using. So our inspect system has our modules for either quote-unquote manual reporting, which is generating a file, which then is securely transmitted to the county, or the alternative of ELR reporting. We also then, through the Inspect app, generate a report, which is transmitted to San Diego County Health and Human Services. And we are in the process of completing the process of transitioning from a quote-unquote manual-based reporting to the ELR system, which is the electronic version of that, which again goes through Redox as an intermediary. So we pass that result to Redox, and then Redox has handled the integration with the county ELR system.
This is a good place to bring in Meredith Haley to unpack this ELR process. She's one of Redox's customer success managers who leads the team at Redox who works with our customers who are reporting COVID test results. Dr. Lauren mentioned electronic lab reporting, or ELR. Can you describe the ELR requirements as it relates to COVID-19 testing and why it's important?
Yeah, for sure. So electronic lab reporting is the automated transmission of laboratory findings which meet requirements for reporting cases of specified diseases. There's around 100 conditions that are required by law to be reported to public health departments, with COVID-19 obviously being the newest on the list. So labs and other testing facilities are required to report contagious diseases for a bunch of reasons, but most applicable to today would be outbreaks, so that outbreaks can be tracked and investigated, the public can be protected and educated, and preventative measures and research can be enacted. So with the growing volume of tests being administered each day, manual processes for reporting these results just can't keep up. And the ability to report COVID results using an ELR process has become critical for companies looking to provide testing services.
Gotcha. So these public health agencies are taking these results, and that's what kind of triggers the contact tracing and things like that?
Yeah, exactly. So when these results, when they come back, you know, positive or negative, that's sent to the state so they can see how the measures that they're putting into, you know, their state, their city, their county, if those are working, if the numbers are going up, they're going down, and if they need to put stricter measures, stricter quarantines in place to kind of manage those numbers is really where the focus has been for these health departments.
So the electronic piece of lab reporting is kind of the new thing, right? Mm-hmm. Dr. Laurent mentioned that they're doing a manual lab reporting process right now. When it's electronic, isn't that supposed to make everything easier? Like, why do these labs still need help doing electronic lab reporting?
Yeah, so it should make things easier. And for labs that are regional, they only need to communicate with a handful of health departments. But groups that want to provide a nationwide solution run into a technical challenge as each state health department defines the processes and methods in which they prefer to receive results. So each state requires different connection methods and nuances in their electronic lab reporting capabilities for HL7 messages. The majority of states automate via SFTP connections. Most of these are hosted by the state, but some are hosted by the connecting party. Most are in real time, but some are in batch files at the end of the day. A handful of states require a HTTPS SOAP web service connection, while others use a more standard VPN for connectivity. Some states have state-run HIEs that act as a front door for ELR data. So what that means is they'll take the data and route it to the state for reporting, as well as capturing it in the HIE. And a few states even offer their own APIs to receive results. So this is a lot to manage, especially for labs that don't have the existing infrastructure or resources for HL7 integrations already in place.
Yeah, it sounds like quite the hodgepodge of how to connect up to them. And, you know, a lot of these lab companies don't have a bench of software developers who are sitting around making software, right? They have scientists who are working in these labs.
They're focused on this testing, and that's their bread and butter, and providing those tests to all of America, and that's where their focus is. So they might not have that information for how to kind of set up these HL7 integrations or those resources available without hiring a brand new team to come on board to do that.
Yep. So in your role at Redox, you've worked with a lot of these labs. What are you actually doing to help them?
So Redox is able to take away the complexity of having to understand each state's specific needs and everything I just explained before, and trying to understand all those nuances between the different connectivity types. So rather than handling 50 unique connections based on each state's custom needs, labs can connect to a single Redox endpoint to send results nationwide via one JSON format, while letting Redox manage the setup and maintenance of those various connectivity methods. So we really started our ELR journey partnering with Curative, who was one of the earlier labs rolling out testing nationwide. As of today, Redox is sending COVID-19 results to 35 state health departments, along with some city and county level departments as well. We're actively installing in 8 more state health departments, all projected to go live before the end of the year. And as we've built each of these connections, our team has kept track of the reporting requirements to make it faster and easier to start sharing data. We've put together an electronic lab reporting playbook of sorts, detailing the data elements required by the Department of Health and Human Services, state health departments, and electronic lab reporting standards. So Redox really takes that integration burden off the labs and handles translating that data into the format that each state requires.
They hit our API, and then we do the dirty work of connecting up to all of those disparate types of connections and figuring out the requirements for each of the different states and counties and cities that need the ELR reporting.
Exactly. And it was really fun in the, especially in the early days with Curative, kind of figuring this out together with them and how to kind of navigate the different states and figuring out which states preferred what connectivity method, getting those configurations in our place in our system. But with that experience, we were able to just constantly improve our ELR capabilities and really want our partners to benefit from the reusability of the Redox network. So we're seeing exponential improvement with each install. Our first lab reporting connection to California's Department of Health went live after a 20-day install, and the second project only took 10 days. We saw the same results in Texas. Our first install took 17 days, and the second took 4. And then Maryland install time dropped from 30 days to 2 days. So it's been so fun to be a part of, and it's just so important to us that we're able to stand up these connections immediately and get quality data in the hands of policymakers.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I mean, doing installs in 2 days has been really, really cool to see, especially when we're dealing with such important data transfer as COVID results.
Yeah, the Curative story is pretty amazing. They stood up testing sites and parking lots in kind of random places as this was unfolding in March and April. As testing really evolves in the country, like what are we looking forward to?
Yeah, so, you know, a couple of our partners are doing that rollout, like you said, in parking lots. A lot of them are within the health systems setting up their testing. We've seen a lot of universities creating their own labs within the university to get those results quicker and in their own hands. What we're really excited to help with are these new at-home COVID testing companies that are starting to emerge, like Gauss Surgical and Phosphorus Diagnoses, where patients can be at their home, get either a test kit or an app on their phone to be able to get that immediate COVID result just by the comfort of their own living room.
And I think as we approach this third wave of the pandemic and winter, right, just more reasons to stay inside, bundled up, and swab your nose from home.
Definitely. Yeah, there is talk too about kind of a super bug and getting some of these results tracked with, you know, mixing of flu A, flu B, and also COVID to see kind of if everyone's being tested for all of those at the same time and what's coming back together or separate. So that's also been really cool to explore.
Yeah, certainly. Well, Meredith, thanks for joining us here for this little Redox portion of the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it was fun coming on. So thanks so much, Nico.
Now let's transition back to Dr. Laurent and where they're going with the Excite Lab.
You mentioned that the Excite Lab, due to its success, is actually growing to areas beyond just students and faculty, right?
Yes, we are offering testing to local schools, as well as we're continuing to screen the employees at San Diego Fire and Rescue. We are also integrated into a number of research programs, currently the largest of which is an NIH-funded RADx initiative that's focused on underserved population. In that study, we are focusing on pregnant women and children in the San Ysidro area of San Diego and offering any person who actually is seeking care at the Maternal and Child Health Center in San Ysidro, as well as any person accompanying them to their visit, support people, caregivers, parents. And our intention is to offer testing to contacts of anyone who tests positive through that research program. We recently received this award and are just standing up the program now, but we hope to launch very, very soon there.
Nice. Yeah. And last time we talked a little bit about how currently the collection of your samples happens in an observed fashion, but you're working on creating an unobserved collection so people can actually, you know, just do it on their own and drop it in a Dropbox or something. Tell me about the progress there and some of the complications in doing it that way.
Yeah. So the difference between observed and unobserved physically is very similar. So basically the individual will take a sterile swab, and they will do what we call an anti-urinary swab. So this is basically just a swab of the nostril area. So it's not terribly uncomfortable. Currently, with observed collection, the person then hands that swab to a healthcare provider, and the healthcare provider puts the swab into the tube. And the healthcare provider, of course, is watching the person collect the swab to make sure it's adequate. So the issue with unobserved is, of course, there's no provider who's there present looking at the person as they're taking the sample. So we have to make sure that the swab collection is adequate. And one of the pathways to doing this is to actually recruit a number of people. The FDA has guidance indicates that it should be at least 50 people and have them do the unobserved self-collection and then demonstrate that their samples were adequate. And we do this by qPCR. We detect a human sequence to show that that swab had human material on it. So we've actually completed that part of the validation. We recruited 50 volunteers, had them swab themselves with no help from any of the staff, and then we've run that qPCR. So we've crossed that first hurdle. The second hurdle is that we must use a collection material in the tube, the liquid in the tube that the swab goes into, that is both effective and safe. And so we've done some efficacy studies with a number of different materials. So this is material that keeps the viral RNA stable and does not interfere with any of the processes of our test pipeline. So we've done that. We validated that for a number of different materials. And we also have to choose materials that are safe for home use. We've done that as well. And then finally, we have to validate that there's good clinical detection. So we need to recruit 30 volunteers who have clinically tested positive for COVID and 30 volunteers who have clinically tested negative to collect samples by themselves into this material. We have to show that we get good accuracy, good sensitivity, good specificity in that material. And that is what we're anticipating completing very soon. So yeah, we hope to, you know, almost literally have, you know, vending machines that just dispense tubes and swabs one by one upon request, and then drop boxes where people can drop off.
That's amazing. Well, this has been so educational, learning about all of the different places where you guys pulled this together. I know that there are a lot of groups reaching out to you to learn more about the details of how you did this. Beyond what you've already shared, is there anything else that people are asking about that you think would be good to kind of get out there?
I mean, when we talk about what we do, there are questions about details all along the way, from, you know, the beginning of sample collection to resulting. I mean, we're always happy to share our experience. We can get a manuscript that will describe the basic elements of what we do. But yeah, there are certain things that you don't really anticipate until you actually start doing it. But we have such a great team, and that's really helped us get through any of the challenges very efficiently. And, you know, we've really come together as a great working group.
Awesome. Yeah. And so if folks did want to get in contact with you or the team, how could they do that?
Yeah, well, if you Google any of our names with UCSD, we're usually the first ones to show up. That's why the emails, our emails are on our lab homepages. That's probably the best way to get a hold of academics is through email.
Well, thank you so much for sharing and joining us on the show today. I really appreciate you telling the story, and I think it's a wonderful bright spot in this space.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much to Dr. Luis Laurent from UCSD and Meredith Haley from Redox for joining us on the show today. If you're looking to learn more about the riveting inner workings of COVID-19 testing and electronic lab reporting, please reach out to Redox on our website, redoxengine.com. And thank you for listening to the Redox podcast. Until next time, stay healthy out there.